Welcome friends to Literature Mantra. I'm Harsh Singh, and in this audio we will discuss the evolution of translation studies. Now, translation as an activity is not something new. It is something that has been done for centuries and for millennia. But the discipline of translation studies is fairly new. And if we trace the development of or the evolution of translation studies, there are plenty of theoreticians that we will come across. But two names stand out very prominently. One is the name of Roman Jakobson, who is famous for his seminal paper on linguistic aspects of translation. Okay, this is the title of his paper, on linguistic aspects of translation. And the other important personality is James S. Holmes. Okay, James S. Holmes, who published his famous paper called The Name and Nature of Translation Studies. Okay, The Name and the Nature of Translation Studies, which came out in 1972. And the work of Roman Jakobson, which I pointed out, was published in 1959. These two works are considered to be decisive in the evolution of translation studies. And thereafter, let's say after the 1970s, in the 1980s, 1990s, it has been a period of consolidation. Because earlier translation studies was not a discipline. It was just considered a part of linguistics or comparative literature. So just a part of other disciplines. And the 1980s was a decade of consolidation for this fledgling discipline known as translation studies. And having emerged onto the world stage in the late 1970s, the subject began to be taken seriously and was no longer seen as an unscientific field of inquiry of secondary importance. And throughout the 1980s, interest in the theory and practice of translation grew steadily. And in the 1990s, translation studies finally came into its own. And this decade proved to be the decade of global expansion. And this happened particularly because of the explosion of the electronic media and the process of globalization that really picked up steam during the 1990s. And during the 1980s, there are certain theories that were very popular. One such theory was the relevance theory of Ernst August Gutt. Okay, Ernst August Gutt. He is famous for the relevance theory. After that comes the Scopus theory. Okay, the Scopus theory. This theory was particularly associated with Katharina Reis and Hans Vermeer. Okay, Katharina Reis and Hans Vermeer. After that, there was Guidantori's research into pseudo-translation. And all of these offered new methods for approaching translation. Then, in the 1990s, the enormous interest generated by something called corpus-based translation inquiry. Okay, corpus-based translation inquiry, as it was articulated by Mona Baker. Okay, Mona Baker was very popular. And this opened distinct lines of inquiry that, you know, continue to flourish even till date, even in the 21st century. Now, despite the diversity of methods and approaches in translation studies, one common feature of much of the research in translation studies is an emphasis on cultural aspects of translation, or let's say on the contexts within which translation occurs. And as I said that earlier, translation was just seen as a sub-branch of linguistics. But today, translation is seen as a separate discipline. And not just a separate discipline, but a interdisciplinary field of study. And at the beginning, I had pointed out two names, Roman Jakobson and James S. Holmes. But as I said that there were some other theoreticians as well. For example, J.C. Catford, Michael Halliday, Peter Newmark, Eugenie Nida. And these are important because their research into translation, before the establishment of translation studies, started to evolve as a discipline in its own right. And subsequently, it laid the foundations for translation studies to emerge as a separate discipline. And I'm pointing out these names because from an exam point of view, you should be aware of the important theoreticians, both early as well as modern, whose works have helped in the development of translation studies. And in the early phase of its development, translation studies mainly focused on faithful translation of literary works into a second language or the target language. Along with this, there was emphasis on equivalence. So, faithfulness and equivalence were the two important ideals or aims in translation or in translation studies. But nowadays, translation studies is no longer limited to a faithful translation or let's say equivalence theories. Now you'll find things like ethics of translation, politics of translation. So research is being done in these fields, in newer fields. So the scope of translation studies has been increasing steadily. And perhaps the most exciting new trend of all of this is the expansion of this discipline of translation studies beyond the boundaries of Europe. So now translation studies has gone to Canada, India, places like Hong Kong, China, and almost the entire world. And the concerns of scholars and translators have diverged significantly from those of the Europeans. So this is the new trend that has come, because along with going to new places, the scholars, for instance in India or China, have added new dimensions to this discipline of translation studies. And if you consider the example of India, here what happens is, with respect to translation studies, more emphasis has been placed on the inequality of translation relationship, with writers such as Gayatri Spivak, Tejaswini Niranjana, and then Eric Chaffetz arguing that translation was effectively used in the past as an instrument of colonial domination, a means of depriving the colonized peoples of a voice. As in the colonial model, one culture dominated and the others were subservient. Hence, translation reinforced that power hierarchy. And one such critic of India says that the processes of translation involved in making another culture comprehensible entails varying degrees of violence, especially when the culture being translated is constituted as that of the other. Okay, other within quotes. Let me repeat this again. Quote, the processes of translation involved in making another culture comprehensible entails varying degrees of violence, especially when the culture being translated is constituted as that of the other. Okay, other within quotes, unquote. And in the 1990s, two contrasting images of the translator emerged. According to one reading of the translator's role, the translator is a force for good, a creative artist who ensures the survival of writing across time and space, an intercultural mediator and interpreter, a figure whose importance to the continuity and diffusion of culture is immeasurable. Okay, so this is one image of the translator as being very important, as being a creative artist. In contrast, another interpretation sees translation as a highly suspect activity, one in which an inequality of power relations, inequalities of economics, politics, gender, and geography is reflected in the mechanics of textual production. Okay? Is reflected in the mechanics of textual production. And a critic like Mahashweta Sengupta argues that translation can become submission to the hegemonic power of images created by the target culture. Okay? That translation can become submission to the hegemonic power of images created by the target culture. And she says, let me quote her, quote, a cursory review of what sells in the West as representative of India and its culture provides ample proof of the binding power of representation. We remain trapped in the cultural stereotypes created and nurtured through translated texts, unquote. So she is trying to argue that the stereotypes which the colonial powers created via translated texts, because the texts in India, let's say Sanskrit texts or ancient texts, were written in vernacular or Sanskrit, right? How did the British access all of this? They translated it into English. So whatever stereotyped images they understood or they had about India, they just translated it into English, and that is what the entire West came to know about India. So this is the power of translated texts. So this is the second view, which sees translation as a highly suspect activity. So as I said earlier, that writers like Gayatri Spivak, Tejaswini Niranjana, they argue that translation was effectively used in the past as an instrument of colonial domination. Okay. So this has also become a new area of research. This is one of the results of translation studies moving out of Europe. Earlier, at the inception of translation studies, when translation studies began, only few things were there in translation studies because it was limited to the perspective of European scholars. After translation studies has moved out to other parts of the world, other writers, scholars, for example of India, have added new dimensions. And this is one such new dimension, which is how translated texts became an instrument of colonial domination. Now, central to the many theories of translation, articulated by non-European writers are three recurring stratagems. First, a redefinition of the terminology of faithfulness and equivalence. Okay, faithfulness and equivalence. Second, the importance of highlighting the visibility of the translator and a shift of emphasis that views translation as an act of creative writing. Okay, so this is the third one. A shift of emphasis that views translation as an act of creative writing. And the translator is seen as a liberator now. Someone who frees the text from the fixed signs of its original shape, making it no longer subordinate to the source text, but visibly endeavoring to bridge the space between source author and text and the eventual target language readership. And this revised perspective emphasizes the creativity of translation, seeing in it a more harmonious relationship than the one in previous models that described the translator in violent images of appropriation or penetration or possession. And the post-colonial approach to translation is to see linguistic exchange as essentially dialogic, okay, dialogic, as a process that happens in a space that belongs to neither the source nor the target absolutely. And scholars like Sherry Simon and Vanamala Vishwanatha argue that translations provide an especially revealing entry point into the dynamics of cultural identity formation in the colonial and post-colonial contexts. Okay, a revealing entry point into the dynamics of cultural identity formation. So, as I had indicated earlier, that earlier there was emphasis on faithfulness or equivalence in the translation process. But now, translation is seen as a creative process. Now, why do I say creative? And what is the relevance of creativity in translation? You can argue. See, suppose there is a very complex type of phrase in a language. Take, for instance, the example of the phrase called Achilles' heel. Jo aapne suna hi hoga English mein, Achilles' heel. If we were to translate this in Hindi, literally, how would we do it? That Achilles ki edi, yeah, let's say Achilles ka pair. After translating this, though it has been done faithfully, it is rightly equivalent, right? But the meaning, it doesn't convey that sense, because the meaning in English of this phrase is somebody's weak point. When we say Achilles' heel, we mean the weakest point of somebody. But if we were to literally translate this in Hindi, then it will lose all meaning, right? So, a translator who is translating into Hindi should creatively translate in a way that can capture the essence, can capture the meaning or the sense. And similar is the case with any language. You know, you can take numerous examples even from Hindi. If we were to translate that literally into English, it will lose meaning. So, this was the attempt, or let's say, focus in translation studies earlier, that how faithful the translation is, or how equivalent the translation is. But now, translation is seen more of a creative activity, because it does involve creativity in translating something. So, in the course of its evolution, this is one of the changes that has taken place in translation studies. Now, until the end of the 1980s, translation studies was dominated by the systemic approach pioneered by Itamar Even Johar. Okay, this is the name, Itamar Even Johar, and one more person, Gideon Tory. Okay, Gideon Tory. And polysystems theory was a radical development at that time, because it shifted the focus of attention away from arid debates about faithfulness and equivalence towards an examination of the role of the translated text in its new context. And in 1995, Gideon Tory published his famous work called Descriptive Translation Studies and Beyond. Okay, Descriptive Translation Studies and Beyond, a book that reassessed the polysystems approach, which was disliked by some other scholars because it gave overemphasis on the target system. Let's say, if English is the source language and we are translating into Hindi, then Hindi becomes the target language. So, in this approach, there was more emphasis on the target language. And Tory maintains that since a translation is designed primarily to fill a need in the target culture, it is logical to make the target system the object of study. And central to polysystems theory was an emphasis on the poetics of target culture. Okay, emphasis on the poetics of target culture. And it was suggested that it should be possible to predict the conditions under which translations might occur, and to predict also what kind of strategies translators might employ. And whereas previously the emphasis had previously been on comparing original and translation, often with a view to establishing what had been lost or betrayed in the translation process, the new approach in translation studies took a resolutely different line, seeking not to evaluate but to understand the shifts of emphasis that had taken place during the transfer of texts from one literary system into another. And polysystems theory focused exclusively on literary translation. Though it operated with an enlarged notion of literary, which included a broad range of items of literary production, including dubbing, subtitling, children's literature, popular culture, as well as advertising. So polysystems approach kept on broadening itself, but there came a point where divisions began to occur within that group of scholars, which focused on polysystems approach. For example, theoreticians like André Lefebvre, then Lawrence Venuti, these two began to explore the implications of translation in a much broader cultural and historical frame. And Lefebvre first developed this idea of translation as refraction rather than reflection. Okay, this is a very famous phrase by André Lefebvre, that translation is a refraction rather than a reflection. And this approach offers a more complex model than the old idea of translation as a mirror of the original. So this is the kind of change that is taking place within cultural studies. And inherent in his view of translation as a refraction was a rejection of any linear notion of the translation process. And he argued that texts have been seen as complex signifying systems, and the task of the translator is to decode and re-encode, okay, decode and re-encode whichever of those systems is accessible. Okay, this is the point of view of André Lefebvre. And similarly, Lawrence Venuti insists upon the creativity of the translator and upon the fact that his or her visible presence of the translator in the translation process and in the translated material. And translation, according to Venuti, with its allegiance both to the source as well as the target cultures, is a reminder that no act of interpretation can be definitive. Okay? No act of interpretation can be definitive. And translation is therefore a dangerous act, potentially subversive and always significant. And in the 1990s, the figure of the subservient translator has been replaced with the visibly manipulative translator. Okay? The figure of the subservient translator has been replaced with the visibly manipulative translator, or a creative artist mediating between cultures and languages. And in a very important book that appeared in 1991, the translator of Latin American fiction, very famous, Suzanne Jill Levine. Okay? Suzanne Jill Levine, she playfully describes herself as a subversive scribe. Okay, subversive scribe, an image that prefigures Venuti's view of the translator as a powerful agent for cultural change. Okay, so the view of Suzanne Jill Levine and Lawrence Venuti are in alignment. Both of them are arguing the same thing. And remember this famous phrase by Venuti, that translation is a reminder that no act of interpretation can be definitive. And also this phrase by Suzanne Jill Levine, who describes herself as a subversive scribe, because she herself is a translator, okay, as a subversive scribe. Now, I'm pointing this out because from an exam point of view, these are important. There can be direct questions on all of this. Now, the development of translation studies in the 1990s can best be seen as the establishment of a series of new alliances that brought together research into the history, practice and philosophy of translation with other intellectual trends. The links between translation studies and post-colonial theory, for instance, represent one such alliance, okay? The alliance between translation studies and post-colonial theory. Then there is another very important alliance of translation studies and corpus linguistics. Okay, corpus linguistics. Then there is another very important alliance between translation studies and gender studies. Okay, translation studies and gender studies. And Sherry Simpson, you know, who is a very important theoretician in the field of translation studies, says that language does not simply mirror reality, but intervenes in the shaping of meaning. And translators are directly involved in that shaping process, whether the text they are dealing with is an instruction manual, a legal document, a novel, or a classical drama. And just as gender studies have challenged the notion of a single unified concept of culture by, you know, asking awkward questions about the ways in which canonical traditions are formed, so translation studies, through its many alliances, asks questions about what happens when a text is transferred from one source to target culture. Okay, so this is the impact of these alliances. These alliances, or let's say interlinkages between these various disciplines, have helped in broadening translation studies, have helped in adding new dimensions to translation studies, and also helped in adding new perspectives. And the common threads that link the many diverse ways in which translation has been studied over the past two decades are an emphasis on diversity, a rejection of old terminology of translation as faithfulness and betrayal of an original. After that, the foregrounding of the manipulative powers of the translator, and a view of translation as bridge building, okay, bridge building across the space between source and target, okay.